Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking about the rise of the unsanctioned race.
Yes, we're talking about unsanctioned races which have been around for a long while but have risen in their prominence of late.
Yes, I think that's true.
And they've become almost like a showpiece of running's underground.
Yeah, it's the it's an underground movement, isn't it?
Yeah.
Underground movement, kind of cool.
Yeah. Seemingly very welcoming, but also very cool.
Yeah. Get your best pair of shoes on and your best t-shirt.
Get your shiniest stuff and go run around your city at night.
Yeah, no rules.
No rules, no route.
No rules, no route. Which sounds
very difficult.
Lawless, isn't it? Where are you at that point? But anyway, there's more of that to come from David Smith, who's taking part in an underground race, an unsanctioned race, which leads us on to, well, I think the Barclay Marathons.
Should talk about it.
We should talk about it. Well, some relatively good running went on the weekend. It was...
We need to talk about your running if we're going to talk about relatively good running. But let's talk about the Barclays.
Yeah, let's talk about the amazing Jasmine Paris becoming the first woman to run the Barclay Marathon. Just incredible. Yeah.
Everything about the imagery, the videos,
yeah,
all the stuff that came of that, of her sprinting with everything that she had left, which was probably nothing,
yeah,
to get to the gate. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's so inspiring, isn't it? You watch it, it's just like, it's actually quite an emotional thing to see.
And for it to be so down to the wire after all that time and everything and just incredible.
So she did it with 99 seconds to spare, so like 60-hour cut-off. Yeah. So, and I don't know how much sleep she had, because the reporting is all done basically via Keith Dunn on Twitter. But sleep deprived, I'm sure.
I saw one thing like about a three-minute power nap. At one point, like before she headed out, I think maybe for Loop 5. I can't remember what it was. All sorts of stuff.
It's just a staggering, like, when you think you're pushing hard yourself, I think holding the image of Jasmine Paris on the fifth loop in your head is good. It's instructive. You'd be like,
oh, that's seventh rep of my whatever.
Amazing. Five finishes this year.
Yeah, it's too. Is it too easy?
Yeah, sixth loop next year? No.
No.
Incredible.
No.
Yeah, it has to go down as one of the great ultramarathon performances ever. Has to.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
without debate, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not saying it is the, but I mean, if you can, you know, email us
in. There's a case for it, yeah.
Email us in, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk, with any suggestions of other top-tier.
I'd love that. Oh, I'd love a list. Imagine a 10-strong list.
Yeah, we could. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's get hold of it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's make it up. Jasmine Paris, right now.
The one thing is Jasmine Paris has to be in there.
She is.
If you give a list without in there, you're wrong.
We're
not accepting your list, okay? Hey, I was running on the weekend, but I feel ridiculous saying that after what we've just talked about.
No, come on. Because we both signed up for this race. I, unfortunately, am still unable to compete at such levels. But you had a fantastic day out in Epping Forest.
The Orion 15.
Courtesy of the Orion Harriers.
Yeah, it was a great race. It's actually had some of the kind of fell running ethos to it. So it was like, turn up at a clubhouse, there's sort of two water stations on a 15-mile route, and you could grab a jelly baby if you were feeling particularly hungry.
Lucky.
Yeah, and you followed the course on, it was kind of sawdust or
something. Yeah, it is, yeah.
On the route. So you had to kind of, it wasn't unfeasible that you could get lost if you weren't concentrating. But all that added to it, it was like, it was a great kind of rugged, unfussy adventure in the southeast, and probably about as close to a trail race as you can get in southeast England. So it was great. Yeah, about 400 runners, I think. Quite a good standard. Just loved it, mate. I mean, Epping Forest was very, very muddy. Yes. But it is a magical place.
It is an absolute slop fest at this time of year. Yeah. It's quite sticky as well.
It's very sticky, yeah. It's a reminder to me, like anyone who listens to runs cross country will know this, but like when you know, if you were trying to like apportion your effort over a road race and you were like 3 miles into 15 miles and you were blowing, you'd be like, I've got it so wrong.
Yeah.
But this, it was like, well, the first 3 miles was like some of the worst. And you're running up and down like Pole Hill in the mud and stuff. And I was like, I'm really out of breath, but I think that's right. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's
actually appropriate, because then it's downhill and then it's flat and then I'm out of breath again. So my energy levels were like, I was almost as knackered like the whole time. It's like a kind of constant fartlek exercise. But no, it was great. Great to do it. I definitely would do it next year. So if you've been, you know, I'm in.
Top 40, I want to say, everyone. Rick Mr. Pearson finished top 40 out of 400. Yeah. Incredible. 2002.
2002.
2002 minutes.
Yeah, I did get lost at one point, but only for about 30 seconds. I wish I could have claimed it was 2 minutes. Then I could be like, oh, you know, if I hadn't gone right out of that puddle. But it didn't even make a difference.
Incredible performance.
But it was good, mate. And I tell you what, look, I'm interested in these unsanctioned races because I've never done one.
No.
And it does feel like a genuinely new thing. I think it is cool and it is kind of like a bit of the edgier side of running.
Mm-hmm.
So should we get David on to fill us in?
To talk to our guest of the week.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Our guest this week is a journalist and sub-3 marathoner who recently wrote a piece for Runner's World magazine on the rise of the unsanctioned race. Here to tell us more about this growing lawless phenomenon, it's David Smith. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I think I might actually be too cool to talk to you nowadays.
Yeah, you've done the unsanctioned race. Yeah, you've been spotted around Shoreditch. But can you tell us, what exactly do we mean when we say unsanctioned race?
So the word unsanctioned, it does kind of suggest something illegal, doesn't it, or something that doesn't have many rules, but it does have some rules. In fact, it might even have more rules than just your traditional run from here to here and that is the and then you're finished. So it's quite a nebulous thing because it can be all sorts of different formats. The people that are doing it at the moment still keep messing around and like coming up with new types of races, but it's unsanctioned because what it means is they don't close the roads. There's not usually any marshals. They quite often have them at night, which makes it feel quite edgy and dangerous. Mm. Some people just call it street racing or urban running because it's usually in a city, which makes it feel a bit more. Yeah, running around a city late at night. What could be more exciting than that?
Exactly.
There's a bunch of guys in Nottingham who are the main people doing it in the UK at the minute. They just call themselves unsanctioned athletics, so that's probably why the races get called unsanctioned races.
Ah, okay.
And their slogan is "No route, no rules." Like I said, there are a few rules, but it's
how do you do a race without a route? Is it point to point? You just go the first person from that A to B.
Well, I have to ask David. He's done.
Well, no, I mean that was a question for David. I just looked at you at the same time.
So it was the one that I did is kind of the fairly standard format, which is they instead of giving you a route, they give you checkpoints, they give you places to go to. So we were in Shoreditch, like Rick said, in London's trendy Shoreditch, and started at a running shop there, and about 20 minutes before the start they said, okay, from here you have to go to St Paul's Cathedral tube station, the Rough Trade East record store in Hackney, which is near Brick Lane, and a pub in Victoria Park in Hackney called the Inn on the Park. But then the deal is you can go to all three of those by any route and in any order. So you can kind of pick which one you want to go to first, which one you're going to want to go to next. And then there's prizes, obviously, for first man back, first woman back, but also the person who ran the shortest route gets a prize as well.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
So orienteering is kind of prized as well as speed.
I like that because immediately your brain goes, well, what's logistically the smartest route? Like, is there a way to tick them all off? Actually, but then the land, sort of, it's a weird sort of triangle of destinations. So how do I get to each one of them first? Naturally, you want to end at a pub. That makes most sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you had to get back to the running shop as well.
Oh, so. God. Right. Okay. No, then that's even more complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I guess, the rise of this sort of is more documented thanks to social media. So perhaps the idea of an unsanctioned race has a bit more of an allure to it, because it's kind of, but this sort of racing is like as old as time, right? This isn't necessarily like a new phenomenon. Like the unsanctioned races have always been there. I know that there was always the one that took place the night before the London Marathon, where you ran the London Marathon route in the opposite direction, backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And all these sorts of things. Right. So, you know, is there a reason why now people are noticing unsanctioned races more, do you think? Or is it just because it's people are making more noise about them?
I think it's the people that have started doing it, and it's we'll probably get on to the fact that it was some New York people that kind of kicked this off a few years ago. The people that are doing it, what they probably have in common is that they're really good at social media, and they're really good at making this look really cool. And like one of their top priorities would be to bring along a load of photographers and videographers and people that know how to do like short form, little fast cutting videos with lots of snazzy graphics. And the fact that it's often at night as well, these sort of flash photos of people moving really fast through the city, it makes it look super appealing on social media, even though there might not actually be that many people doing the race. I mean, it's not like London Marathon. It is, the one I did was 105 people, and that was pretty big for these things, apparently.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the origin then. It did start in the States, didn't it? And are there kind of some marquee unsanctioned races that are kind of people might have heard of?
Oh, I don't know if you've heard of them, but it all started with a bunch of cyclists. Do we like cyclists? Do we need to
love
boo
them?
Or something?
Absolutely love them. I am. hold myself in amongst them.
So you can blame cyclists. So Ben, you might have heard of an alley cat race.
Yeah, the couriers used to do it. Like it was basically the fixed wheel couriers used to do these alley cat races. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, bike messengers kind of challenge themselves to, again, hit checkpoints, and it's all about who gets there the fastest. So it's not only, are you the best bike rider, but also do you know all the shortcuts around New York? It's because that's a kind of cool thing to know about. So it kind of extended from there. And there's a guy in New York called David Trimble, and he was into cycling. He was into alley cat races, and he, to celebrate his birthday in around 2000, I think it was 2008, he wanted to put on a bike race like for his friends, and then for his friends who weren't cyclists to come and watch as well. And this is the birth of a sort of semi-legendary bike race called the Red Hook Crit, which is short for, well, Red Hook is a place in Brooklyn, a sort of industrial area around Brooklyn. And the Crit is short for Criterium. Am I saying that right if you're a cyclist, yeah, Ben?
That's right. It's a short form, the sort of shortest form of a road race. You basically do laps of something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this one is like a 1 kilometer lap and you do like 24 laps. And if somebody overtakes you, then you're out. That's the end of your race. But they're all on fixed gear bicycles with no gears, no brakes, lots of sharp corners, loads of crashes. And of course, unlike the Tour de France, where you might climb a mountain and people whoosh past you for 20 seconds, you could really get involved in the whole race because you see them going past and past and past. So that became quite legendary in the bike world. And then they started kind of making a whole day of it. So they started having a 5K running race as well around the same track. People got quite into that, and then he got connected with a New York running club called Orchard Street Runners, and they put on a race, a couple of good ones. They did something called the Midnight Half, which is a half marathon. If it wasn't exactly at midnight, it was at night as well. And again, it's checkpoints, so half marathon distance, but you have to find your own way.
Right.
And they also do one called the Breadroot Race, which starts at 2 a.m. 34-mile race starting at 2 a.m.
Wow.
It's called the Breadroot because that's when bakeries would be delivering bread around New York. So you're like sprinting around the empty streets of New York at 2 a.m. doing this big race.
Wow.
That's cool, isn't it? That's got some good history there. I mean, is it dangerous, David? Because I guess, like, you know, races do close roads for a good reason, right? And a closed roads race, that's also something I would look out for. I'd be like, great, because that means I can just concentrate on going quickly or whatever. What safety stuff is in place, or is the danger aspect part of the kind of allure of these things?
We all do it in those inflatable sumo suits that you see on stag do's, and so that helps. I didn't mention that at the start. It does feel a bit dangerous, to be honest with you. I mean, it felt. Firstly, the fact that the start, instead of saying ready, steady, go, and everyone just like trots off, everyone literally scattered like they just I don't know, set up a firework and running away from someone. And there was very much a feeling of like, I've just committed a crime and the cops are coming. And it's a good job that we kind of had race numbers on, because I think we probably did look like we were, you know,
yeah, legging it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This Red Hook Crit, for a while, it was sponsored by Rockstar Games, who make the computer game Grand Theft Auto. And it did, yeah, it felt a bit like that. Like you just sort of punch someone in the face, crash their car, and you're now making your getaway on foot. Yes, they don't, you know, you're probably not going to remember your Green Cross code when you're doing these things, but they've, you know, they make you sign a waiver before you start, saying it's your fault if you get hit by a bus, not their fault. And they do kind of lay it on quite thick with the, you need to, obviously this is not a closed race. You need to be careful. You need to, you know, show some consideration to pedestrians, because they're all out in the street. There were lots of pub drinkers out like sort of blocking the pavements in some places. But I did see people, running on the roads, running in the cycle paths, running against traffic, and kind of,
I think,
you
know, that
if you want to win, you have to be.
Yeah. There's a sort of degree of like, you're all adults, look after yourselves, but don't be awful to the general public. It shouldn't be one of those things that's frowned upon because people are doing it. I think I like the idea of just being able to sort of, you might, you know, skirt around something or just nip out here and there, but you're not being, as long as you are being considerate, I think that's great.
There's room for that, isn't there?
Of course there should be,
there's a lot of interest from the, like, the people at pubs around the place. They were all sort of asking what we were doing, and some people were going like, they went that way when I was going past them. I just didn't know if they were sort of drunkenly teasing me or if they were actually trying to help. Or
there's a good line in your piece though, where you kind of question at one point, you say, hang on, is this just kind of orienteering for cool people? That is kind of a legitimate question, isn't it? Like, this does sound like it has lots of the hallmarks of orienteering, which isn't prized as it's kind of particular for its cool, I would say.
But on that as well, I think that there is, you probably receive great sense of gravitas about your local knowledge. Like, I think that there is a sense of like, if it's these things, you know, they're in London or whatever it is, and you know how the, you know, if you have that nuanced knowledge of the streets and how to get around, that does bring a certain credit to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I mean, it kind of is orienteering, let's be honest. And I've done a couple of orienteering races and they're really good fun. So that I think maybe orienteering does have a branding problem. It's associated with what, the scouting movement perhaps. And it's not that accessible because it's never been an Olympic sport, so it doesn't kind of get that much attention. Big in Sweden, I think, if you look at an orienteering map, it's completely different from a Google map. It's like it really is a sort of foreign language that you might need to learn to go along to do an orienteering race. Whereas this, you know, you can use your phones. It's not right. Just who's got the best street knowledge. Like somebody told me at the start of our race, just plug the destinations into Google Maps, stick one earbud in, and off you go. Let the Google lady
boom.
Tell you where to go.
No, all my sense of like this is. Yeah, I think they should be absolutely banned. I think you should be able to only do this, and you have to.
If you're like a sort of black cab driver.
Yeah, I think you have to have the knowledge. But on foot.
Luckily for you, Ben, I forgot my earbuds, so I did have to just rely on my knowledge of having lived in London about 11 years previously.
Oh, great.
And I got really lost. And where did I come? I came something like 65th out of 105, but actually only four people ended up running further than I did.
Wow.
That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I nearly ran the furthest by knowing the least about London.
I'm intrigued. So with the people who won and ran, was the shortest route the winning time?
And no.
Right, okay.
The person who got the prize for running the shortest route was, I think he was something like 41st.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I had it written down and now I can't find it.
Oh, no,
he ran 10.3 kilometres and I think I ran 12.3.
Okay.
Yeah, I ran 12.13 kilometres.
But the first person back to the shop ran slightly further but quicker.
Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't equally on paper. Like, this was a race where they'd invited some pretty
fast people,
yeah. And the people who were kind of fastest on paper also were not the winners. They were up there. But the couple of people who won this race were not necessarily the people you'd expect to. So there is this extra element of jeopardy, or it's not just if you've got the fastest 5k time you're going to win.
That's quite nice. It levels the field a bit, doesn't it, in terms of the racing and the normal trend of I am the fastest, I will finish first.
Totally. I think that's good.
And they've also been messing about with it in other ways as well. So Luke Myers, who does the Unsanctioned Athletics, they did one recently where the deal was, I think they only told you just before the start you had to run 7.7 kilometers. And it had to be a single loop, no out and backs. And then what they didn't tell people was that if you ran 10 meters short or 10 meters long, then you get a 10 second time penalty. So the person who finished first actually ended up being third because they ran a bit further than someone who got closer to 7.7 kilometers.
I like this. I think there's a real element to tricking the people who are taking place in the race. It's a real good thing.
Yeah, great.
I like that. Yeah.
The Barclays a little bit like that, isn't it? You don't know too much about it. And obviously
it's a treasure hunt as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. In terms of like the type of run or type of person who was out at the unsanctioned race that you did, David, was it noticeably different to the kind of demographic you might get at, I don't know, your standard road race? And do you feel like these races are trying to position themselves as an alternative to that kind of thing?
Well, I thought I was blending in, and then a guy came up to me who had an entirely grey head of hair and said something like, I think you're the only other person my age here. And I thought I was fitting in among all these cool young people with moustaches and leg tattoos, but I apparently was not. So it does feels a bit cooler. There's lots of, you'll be aware of the sort of difference between a running crew versus the running club. So this one anyway, they were like traditional running clubs invited, like Highgate Harriers, but also there were lots of these sort of newer crews there to participate as well. They've got nicer t-shirts, and again, they're good at Instagram. That's the difference, I think.
What about the sort of unsanctioned stuff, multi-day relay type things? If we think about, I guess, Speed Project
is probably the best known,
like the best known one.
Speed Project's about to start, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Again, ultra dangerously, sort of unapologetically cool, slightly off-puttingly so, I think. And I've seen, like, I know that there's a running club in London called Your Friendly Runners, and they have a city to coast one. It's like a relay, a T-lane. And it's just, you know, there's more and more of these things are happening where it's sort of slowly clubs, crews, projects, whatever they want to be, are sort of putting on their own events. But again, I guess there's a waiver. You take part if you want to. You have a team. You get in a van if you need to. You drive to places while people are running.
Yeah.
And you have to get from one point to the other. So, I mean, that's a sort of much grander scale, I guess, to these sort of within a city.
But you feel like it might be like a growing
I think that's got way more, sort of, not way more growth, but certainly a sort of bigger capacity for just... more of an event, so we say.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean, I guess in terms of accessibility, these things have tended to be about 10K, something like that. So you can turn up and just enjoy it. It's not really something you can train for, but it's maybe a good part of your running diet, if you like. Just like, let's do something a bit different where it isn't just about how fast I can go. I don't know about you. I'm not sure I want running to be cool. Or is it cool now?
What do you think? I think that it's a really... this one is a question that come back to way more and more now about how significant that is as a thing, as in how good is it for running to be considered to be that cool, and how off-putting that might be to people who like who want don't... to start running, like what's their vision of running now, what do they see running as, if it changes from being the accessible thing that everyone can do. If you come to it via a social media platform, is it just full of people chasing gratification on a social media platform? Is that what running looks like? Or is it getting past that and finding a club that makes you enjoy it, or just going out on your own and not telling anyone that you're doing it? Like, are you allowed to do that anymore? I think all these things with the coolness.
Yeah.
Like, and brands jump on board, or like something comes out that's like the crossover into the world of fashion and running, like the two worlds are now very much combined. And
has running got too cool? It's quite funny because I used to think that running used to have the problem, even maybe 6-7 years ago, that it wasn't cool enough.
It wasn't cool at all.
And it wasn't, and for that reason probably wasn't attracting certain people, bringing people into running. And I think crews have been good at that. But it's interesting if it's a point where there's some people now who maybe like, oh, running's a little bit too cool for for me.
Or I think that, or there's just within running, people consider themselves to be outside of a certain aspect of running.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So you and I, who aren't in any of these crews, would probably, or David, as you say, like you attended this race and you thought, am I blending in or not? And you sort of eventually no. And, and does that make you feel unwelcome there? Probably not. You probably had a lovely evening. Well,
I did make the comparison in the piece, I think, and this is what it felt like. It was a bit like discovering an indie band that made, so it's like, oh, I'm gonna do this race, you probably haven't heard of it, that type thing.
Yeah,
so it felt a bit like, you know, when an indie band maybe has a hit single and like, do they want to go and play arenas and be mainstream, or do they want to like stay cool? So you know, maybe there's room for your Ed Sheeran and Beyonce races, and then this is more of a
It's a broad church, isn't it?
This is the Dublin Castle.
Would you do one again?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's brilliant fun, and I actually put one on. That's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but Isaac, just my little running group in the village where I live. I said, right, we all go out on a Thursday night, and I said, right, well, I just picked 4 landmarks in the town nearby.
Yeah,
told them which they were within like 5 minutes of them setting off, and it was just like 10 people went and like pelted around the streets and appeared to have a lovely time. One guy tried so hard that he got really injured for like the next 4 months because he got really into it. Hello, Jim.
Jim.
But yeah, I think everybody had a good time because it was really easy. I literally just went, here's 4 places that have reasonable distance apart. I tried it out a few days before, and everyone had a brilliant time. So if you just want to. If you just want to do something a bit different with your mates, equally, it doesn't take a lot.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Does raise like, it also takes away that sort of, I'm training for this race that takes place on this date and I must prepare myself in such a way. Whereas I guess if you suddenly attend something, I mean, you know that the unsanctioned stuff is coming, I assume. Like there is obviously a date in the diary that you're working towards, but you don't quite know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's quite nice in terms of like, you can't get race day fit.
Which is
often the sort of real driving force for a lot of runners. It's that I must be the best version of myself on that day.
On this route.
This route at that time. Whereas this is a bit more like, you don't know what you're doing. Go! Ah!
You don't necessarily know. You might know that you've got a race coming up, but you don't know how far it's going to be. I mean, I suppose things like the Midnight Half is going to be a half marathon.
Yeah.
But the unsanctioned guys, another one they did that was good fun was everyone met at Nottingham train station. They thought they were going to start the race from there. And actually, they were handed a tram ticket and they were told, get on this tram, get the tram all the way to the last stop. When you get off at the last stop, come back here and you've got the length of the tram journey to plan how you're going to
do it. That's good, isn't it?
I like it.
Yeah. So again,
a bit mischievous.
You know, there's infinite possibilities for messing about with it. You were saying it's all unplanned, but then there's a guy I met in who works out of Brussels called, he's called Vincent Gissens, and he does Octane racing, and they're all about speed. So actually one he did was, let's do a Strava segment, like a 2 kilometer Strava segment in Brussels. And he gave people all week to try it. So this is the segment, come and do it, try it as many times as you like. And then we'll do it as an actual race on a Friday night. And because everyone had been sort of practicing it all week, then they did smash the crown or whatever. Yeah. Strava. So that was a bit more pre-planned, but it's all just, yeah, there's a lot of things you can do with,
but still,
the race running, format. Yeah, exactly.
Then just let's run as fast as you can.
Yeah, I think also, it's quite creative, isn't it? Yeah.
A flat out 2K race is not exactly what you know, most people are aiming for.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I just
yeah.
think that's even that in itself is a nice interlude probably for a lot of people's daily habits.
Exactly. David, before you go, tell us about your joggling. You've been spotted on the South Downs.
Now, hey, if we're going to talk about things, all things cool,
yeah,
joggling has got to be up there.
And now, the opposite of cool. I thought you were going to give me a whole other podcast and talk about juggling. It's not fair to just cram it in at the end. It deserves its own. Maybe juggling is having a bit of a moment, because the BBC News did a story about a couple of guys in Scotland. You might have seen it. There's a little video of them doing it, and they've done a number of races while... we didn't make clear. It's juggling while running. So there are records, surprisingly fast records. I think the world marathon record for somebody juggling three balls is 2:55.
That's incredible.
It's a bit quick, isn't it?
Which is not too shabby, is it? And park run would be 16 minutes or something.
Wow.
For a 5K. So it's a thing. There's in the UK, there seems to be just this Facebook group with about 34 people on it. But I did, this is for another article, I met a guy called Tim, Tiger Tim, who is approaching his 100th juggling marathon, raising money for the Zoological Society of London.
Wow.
And he's also done, I think, a 78-mile ultramarathon while juggling. And he did a Snowdonia thing. I can't remember if
the Snowdonia race was the mad of all. It's like, what, you ran basically up and down Snowdonia by juggling some balls.
Juggling, yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
anyway, brilliant. Well, as we were discussing earlier, we were all great jugglers. So maybe we can do a relay at some point.
No.
Okay, officially no. Dave, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for coming on the podcast talking about unsanctioned racing.
Thank you.
Let's get you back on at some point. Maybe I was thinking about juggling, but I think it's a little too niche. I think we lose people.
Unfortunately, I don't want to diminish what you're doing, but yes, I think that
what about juggling injuries? I know you like to put injuries.
Oh yeah, that could be good. Yeah, perfect.
How I strained my shoulder, and I'm recovering after juggling for too long. Yeah.
I also discovered, because of writing this, that there is such a thing as swuggling. Guess what swuggling is?
Gosh. Is it safe to Google?
Is it swinging? No, don't know.
Swimming with swimming. You can, apparently you can go, if
backstroke?
You go on like a backstroke, you just sort of throw them directly above your head.
And, I mean, that just,
look it up on YouTube.
There's something for everyone, isn't there?
There is. That's good. I'm glad that there is. There's the sort of the two we've tipped. Both ends of the scale there, the hyper cool unsanctioned all the way through to the great leveler that is juggling, I think. Yeah. And that is what makes running brilliant.
Exactly.
That's what makes running brilliant.
Dave, thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thanks, guys.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, David Smith, and to you, of course, for listening.
If you haven't subscribed to this podcast already, please do. You can also subscribe to the Runner's World magazine. There are 12 issues every year. That's one a month. It's very good. Google Runner's World UK subscription. You'll find it on the Hearst Magazine's website. There'll be a sign-up deal. If you haven't, if you're not a member, if you're not a subscriber already, you'll get a deal. They're probably a very good deal. It's just in time for Easter?
Yeah.
Easter.
Yeah. Go with that.
So, yeah, an Easter treat for yourself. Subscribe to the magazine.
An egg and a subscription run as well.
Hey, chocolate egg and a subscription. Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for listening, and you'll hear from us next week.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.